Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 66 for December 21st, 2009. We'll do it live. All right, it's iPhone Alley Podcast time, the show that discusses all things iPhone, iPod Touch, App Store, all that fun stuff. I'm Michael Johnston, and we're here with Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
Sunday night.
Yeah, it is Sunday night. And also Ken Ray from the macOS Ken podcast is here. Hey, Ken.
Hey, Michael. How's it going?
Really, really well. I'm really happy to have you on because I've been... I don't think it's been a while, I feel like, since I've had you on this show. And I think it's... In the time since I've had you on, I started listening to your podcast regularly again. And I'm just, you know, after doing that, I've really wanted to, you know, get you on because I just love it because
golly, thanks,
you know,
man.
Well, it's 10 minutes of just like, you know, condensed. Here's exactly what you need to know. And there you go. You're good for the day. You got your Apple News.
I really appreciate that.
So if you
I'm glad.
What's that? You're breaking up.
I'm breaking up. Yeah.
That's fine. We can play Guess What Ken Is Saying tonight. But yeah, so check out the macOS Ken podcast, macosken.com. And of course Adam has his show, the wonderful MacCast at MacCast.com. So just getting the plugs in right up front. Right?
Yeah, the check's coming. Don't worry.
Good. Okay. So let's start with the first topic of the evening. Apple redesigns App Pages and App Store. And essentially, what that means is we have a bigger icon to see, a bigger, prettier icon to look
lots
at for the
pretty pictures.
Lots of pretty pictures. They change the way they display the app screenshots. So now instead of a little kind of JavaScript, you know, click through them. They're all displayed in one and you kind of scroll back and forth through them. And I think that kind of helps a little more with, you know, providing extra context to what the previous images were, I suppose.
I like that they shortened the author's description.
I do too. Now, now the next...
Like you get two sentences of whatever they write and then you have to click more to get through to more. And I never read those things anyway. So it was sort of like, oh, great.
Well, here's
show me the pictures. Show me what it looks like, the nice big icon, and then I'll decide if I want to buy it or not. And the reviews, reviews are key for me. I don't know.
Really, you get a lot of value from the reviews in the App Store.
Depends on what it is. You know, I found paid apps reviews I think tend to be a little bit better than the free apps, just still because of that problem of, you know, Apple tried to solve with you can only review the app if you've actually, you know, used it,
right?
So
and it's infinitely easier to get a free app than it is to, you know,
right,
purchase a, you know, especially if you're dealing with your parents' credit card and, you know, permission and stuff.
Yeah, but it's the same thing. I do the same thing with Amazon, right? You look at the two extremes and then try and figure out what the reality is.
Right,
it's kind of like a
right
fun game.
Exactly. Well, okay. So here's the thing that the developers really need to get down now that they have changed this, and it's a really good change. And I wonder, I haven't actually seen the back end in iTunes Connect on how this information is actually filled out, but I assume it's just one giant field where you can put whatever you want. I think maybe they should have a little box for like the teaser where it shows, you know, whatever is before the clicking more button, and it's like limited to 140 characters or something. So you literally have to say what this app does, not, you know, and free for a limited time, you know. Apple would encourage the developer to actually put something relevant in that spot. Mm-hmm. Because it's insane how many apps I see a day, and I run across so many in the App Store where the description gives you, it's not a description. It's just not a description. It just, you know, has a bunch of other crap in there. And that's really frustrating. So I think by limiting what the developers can display at the very top without clicking another link, I feel like eventually the developers are going to have, you know, they're going to figure out how to use that more effectively. And they also move the updates thing right up to the top too, because that is really good to see. You know, I think that on your phone, you get to see exactly what's been updated, but on the App Store, it doesn't show you really. It they've always listed it, but it's always been further down the page. So that's good too. So do you like the new layout?
Me? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. it was okay before. I think it's better now. I like pretty pictures. I mean, honestly, not really joking. I usually jump to the screenshots when I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to buy an app or not, because, you know, I like things that look good.
Me too.
And I want to know if I'm going to spend my 99 cents or my $1.99. That, you know, regardless of if it's good or not, that it looks good.
There's still the one thing that bugs me about it, and I don't understand why they haven't added this. You still can't gift them, can you?
No. And no. Oh, I would so, in, like this year, especially where, you know, times are tough for the internet, at least in my neck of the woods and, or my neck of the internet, I would love to send someone a $2 app that I feel, you know, would really help them out with, you know, with their iPhones. Because, you know, as opposed to saying, here's a gift card, you know, check this out, whatever. That'd be a nice thing to do. I'd love to give away my, you know, what my pick is for tonight. I'd love to give it to all of you if you don't already have it, but I won't disclose that right now.
Is it free?
No.
Because that could bankrupt you in the first week.
Well,
depending on how many people
when
are listening.
When I say all of you, I'm talking to the people I'm actually talking to, not the listeners. I'm sorry. Right. Listeners, you are also awesome. I love the listeners, but I don't have enough money to give you all a $2 app. But yeah, I like that they have, you know, more by whatever developer, the nice rating. I think it's much better. I would love to see more social integration in the sense that, you know, they actually kind of touted that. It's not really social integration. It's just, you know, send this to Twitter. But we've talked about that before.
Right.
So do we want to talk about the Google phone?
Well, sure.
Or do we want to stay on this? Because I feel like
I had one more question about this, and just because you brought up iTunes Connect and I haven't seen it, and I don't think I see this in the show notes, but I just want to ask about. So, Michael, have you actually seen iTunes Connect, the functionality that's behind there? So yeah, that's the developer side of the iTunes house, right? That's how they submit apps and how they get information on how much money their app is making and things like that, right?
Yeah, I haven't actually experienced iTunes Connect firsthand. I've seen several screenshots of it, so I have a very vague idea of how it works. But from what I've heard, developers don't particularly like it because it's it's based on what iTunes and Apple had, you know, previously given to music labels for managing music, and it's not particularly suited for apps.
Like it, because what I was going to bring up is apparently they don't get to use it for like a week.
Yeah, there was an email sent out by Apple stating that iTunes Connect would be down, I think, over the holiday.
For the holidays.
Yeah.
Didn't that happen last year, too, though?
I don't remember, but it's, you know, it's certainly possible. I feel like it would be a good time for it to be down, and at the very same time, it's a bad time for it to be down, right? Because, if a developer wants to launch an app for the holidays... Although I think at that point it's a little late.
Yeah, I think cut off Ken. Go ahead, Ken. Sorry.
Well, I mean, if you want to keep track of exactly how your app is doing over the holidays, if you're that much of a, you know, worrying freak, like I would be, don't get me wrong. I mean, I check my stats every day as far as the podcast goes and things like that. Then it kind of stinks. But yeah, you're right. I can't imagine there's going to be, I mean, if you want to get stuff into the App Store, it needs to happen before the holidays. I know that for the app that I have, the macOS Ken app, which I didn't design, somebody else did. They sent me something on Thursday saying that if I wanted to change anything about the wording, I'd have to have it to them by Friday, which was almost like telling me I can't change it because seriously, It's going to take me a little bit longer than 6 hours to write, you know, what I want the pitch to be. So I just left it the way it is. It seems to me, though, and I'm going back in and checking right now. It seems to me that this happened last year as well, partly I want to say just because, you know, they've got enough going on selling all the music and movies and stuff that they sell on Christmas Day and afterwards between all the iPods, iPhones, new computers and gift cards that get given away. It seems like I seem to remember it being last year, too, like a planned outage for that time. Right. Not going to happen.
Well, I mean, okay, so here's my thought when I heard this. Regardless of what they did last year, I mean, they've been under a lot of fire and a lot of heat and pressure from developers this year, and most recently in the past few months. And I think kind of the point you're making, Ken, is right, that right in the holiday time, you know, you're going to have people that are getting new iPod touches, they're getting new iPhones, they're getting new devices, and they're going to want to put content on there. And I, as a developer, it's my understanding iTunes Connect is also how they can control their pricing. So, like, for example, there was a lot of great discounts and deals over the Black Friday thing, you know, where developers had a one-day fire sale on their app. And this takes away their ability to do that. And what better timing, you know, to put a sale, you know, December 26th, hey, load up your iPhone or your iPod Touch with new apps. And they kind of have to do that in advance. So they can't do the one-day sale thing. It ends up having to be a week sale or for whatever the outage is, which may or may not be a big deal. But it just sort of seems like, you know, when Apple's trying to, like, I think they're being a little bit, you know, sensitive to developers, or a little more, it seems like. At least Phil Schiller's making some comments, you know, good, bad, or otherwise. But it just seems like really a bad PR move, you know, to do it. And I'm not really sure why. But, you know, hopefully it's because they want to give their app review people who have been working really, really hard all year time off. And I guess if that's the justification for it, then it makes sense to a certain degree. But I don't know. Pay people triple time and keep it open, I would think.
So I don't know anything about iTunes Connect. I mean, don't you think there would be a way that you could actually, I would hope there would be a way that you could sort of date something like that?
Oh, set up a time for the sale.
Could I not put in before this week? Could I not put in and say, hey, from the 24th to the 26th, please make it this price, but otherwise make it this price?
I don't know.
As far as timing goes, I think the only thing Apple allows developers to do is to specify when they want to launch their application. So the developers have the option of saying, okay, as soon as it's approved, let it drop on the App Store immediately, or, you know, give it a specific launch time. And that's as far as, you know, what Apple gives them, as far as what I know. But Adam, you brought up the fact that you know, Apple is changing their tune a bit as regards to the App Store submissions. And they've been, let's see, Apple bends rules for developer, maybe working to improve community relations. As far as the application iSimulate, which actually uses private APIs. And we've seen a couple applications this last couple weeks be approved with a little footnote on the approval email saying, you know, you're using a private API. You should stop, you know, in the next update that you send to us.
Right. But they let it through, which they hadn't been doing in the past.
Right. And I think that's a really, really good sign. They're also allowing... Obviously, Ustream has been launched to the App Store, and you can get that, and you can stream from your iPhone to Ustream, wherever you are, over 3G, right? It works over 3G, I'm pretty sure. On the iPhone 3GS and on the iPhone 3G, I've tested it on the 3G. And that also talks about that also points out that they've also started allowing developers to get access to a new private API, which they eventually plan on opening as a public API, which is the ability to capture stuff on the screen and use it in any way they want. So that would work with, I suppose you could use that for sending images to your computer, right? If you want to do a screen capture from your phone. What do you think, Adam?
Isn't there an, oh, you mean like a screen capture of Well, you still can't run your app in the background, right? So you couldn't screen capture anything on the iPhone. Is that what you're talking about? Or
I'm saying screen capture for your personal application. So there are a lot of developers who either use the iPhone simulator or they just right. point a camera at their phone. This would allow them to get a nice clean image from the phone, I assume. Although I may not know how
well,
this works.
Is this an app that only if it's an app that Apple builds? Because, I mean, Apple's still not letting things run in the background, right? So you'd have
well,
you to
wouldn't,
have a
it wouldn't need
capture.
To run in the background. You'd plug it into your you'd add this little bit into
oh,
your
add
application.
It into your own app just to capture your own apps.
Sure. Yeah.
Video. I guess. Yeah.
But I guess
it seems like a lot of work. It seems like what's always bugged me about that is that seems like a tool that Apple should have just available as an app for developers.
Right.
If they want to lock it down with the, you know, like a. You know, they can lock apps to as far as I know, right? Apple could lock an app to a specific model, say this will only run on this one developer's iPhone, or you have to submit something. But frankly, Apple should just put out a screen capture app for all of us, because I think it would behoove them from a promotional standpoint. I mean, there's no reason why, you know, we can do screenshots. Why can't we do video? I mean, Apple's built-in, you know, Google Grabber application or whatever on the Mac will do. Or QuickTime 10 now, right? Will let us take a screen capture. So I do think Apple needs to just have that as a built-in feature on the iPhone, because people are only going to use it to show off apps and promote apps, and you know they'll look better than some of the videos and things that we see. So
well, I don't think that it's an issue with them deciding, you know, whether or not they want it to happen. I think it's an issue with the actual hardware. If you look at the demo units that Apple uses for their keynotes, they're actually using special iPhones, and Steve actually pointed that out at the original iPhone launch, saying, you know, we have special iPhones with special boards in them. And if you look at those are actually fat iPhones. They have a special cable there.
But, you know, Don McAllister, who does screencasts online, he has a jailbroken iPhone only, or I think one of the main reasons he does is because there's a video capture app, a screen capture app.
Yeah, I've heard that. And I was going to try to get Don to come on, but... Doesn't that method of doing it isn't that much rougher than what Apple shows at their keynotes? Isn't it a kind of a choppy video?
I don't know. It's at least a video, you know.
But yeah, there are ways of doing that if you jailbreak your phone. So I think that this private API, you know, opening of this private API is more so for developers of applications like Ustream and Quick, which also Quick announced on their blog this past week that they're also submitting Quick to the App Store. Finally, after I think maybe 2 years in development for Quick, you know, private beta, after seeing Ustream being approved, Quick immediately sent their application to Apple to be approved, and we haven't heard back from them yet. So I'm assuming it hasn't at least been rejected. Hopefully it will be approved, but I'm assuming that this is how developers stream that kind of information, because there's no way to actually record from the camera into their own application. It'll just simply record to the camera roll using the standard way of doing things. But they're planning on opening this up and standardizing it in future versions of the iPhone.
Is Ken still with us?
I don't know.
I was waiting for... You should probably put me on the phone, because I'm having trouble keeping up with the conversation. You guys are breaking up so much coming to me.
Okay. All right, we are back. We had to hang up and change things and get Ken on using his telephone, his iPhone, right? The real phone, not the Skype phone.
We're off of Skype and now on the incredible reliability that is AT&T 3G. So
yes, exactly. So hopefully
this should be 1,000 times better.
Yeah, well, maybe we should have had you call in using the Skype app. I don't know. Maybe we'll try that next time. So we were talking about Apple allowing developers to use private APIs a little bit, you know, getting a little loose with the submissions to the App Store. And I think that's a sign of good times. And actually, a side note, we were all three of us at some point on the Imp Live podcast, the International Mac podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had the privilege of talking with Andy Notko on that. And he actually mentioned that he thinks... You know, the Android marketplace works in the same way that Paul Kafasis mentioned the iPhone App Store should work, in the way that, you know, Apple would have a lot of control over their own app store, and you could get official apps from Apple, but there would also be, you know, you could also get applications from third-party developers' websites. And I asked Andy Anatko how he feels about maybe Apple going to that sort of model, and he didn't feel like Apple would at any time soon do that. Adam, do you have I asked you this question? You don't think Apple's going to do that?
You haven't asked me that question, but I would be in full agreement with Andy that Apple does not want to, they're not going to open up like that. They're just not that kind of company. They historically haven't done that, and they want the control over it, and I think they also enjoy the revenue that comes from it. I think Paul sees the same thing. I mean, we talked to Paul too, and Paul didn't sound like he was very hopeful that Apple would actually do what he was proposing or right. was hoping they would do. But I certainly understand the developers' frustrations, but there's also a number of developers who are very happy with, you know, Apple's model, and Apple is Apple. I mean, I think developers have come to understand and know that, and I think that, you know, I admire the ones who, like Paul, just say, look, you know what? Apple has what they have, and you know what? Unless it changes, we're just going to choose to not develop iPhone apps. And that's fine. We like doing Mac apps, and we're going to continue to do great Mac apps, and we'll be a Mac app developer and just not an iPhone developer. And I think that's their choice. And I think it's fine, but I would agree with Andy. No, Apple's not going to change their tune in that way. I'm hoping that they at least, and it sounds like we were saying before, it sounds like they are getting a little more lenient. They're learning. I'm hoping they're learning from their mistakes and they'll change things, but will they ever open it up and let a developer just release an app on his own site and sell it direct? No, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Right.
Yeah.
Just because it's Apple. Imagine. I don't have any other reason than that. Sorry, Ken.
No, that's it. I mean, I was agreeing with you. It's kind of hard to imagine that they would do that. Partly because of, you know, worrying about... I know both AT&T and Apple say that AT&T has nothing to do with what goes into the App Store, but, I mean, certainly considerations of AT&T's network and things like that do have an effect on what goes into the App Store. And so, I mean, that's just one reason that they wouldn't. I mean, another is the control. Another is wanting to make sure that somebody is not putting out something that's going to automatically have, not automatically have malware, but I mean, making sure that somebody is not putting out something that has malware. I mean, there are a few checks that they're doing, I think, not just that the app doesn't crash, but also that the app doesn't violate anybody else's intellectual property. Also that Apple would not be violating its deal with AT&T to allow it. I mean, there are a ton of things that they're checking, and it's hard for me to see them going, oh, never mind.
Do you think that if they changed to another carrier, maybe that would not be as necessary? Or do you think it has more to do with Apple? You know, that's a really good excuse for Apple, is that they're working with AT&T on this, and they want to make sure that these applications aren't, you know, horrible on their networks. Because I just feel like, you know, there's a false sense of security with the approval process, like Paul was mentioning back a few shows, and that they really just kind of check to see if it crashes. And like you said, Ken, also that it doesn't violate any sort of intellectual property. But if you look at, I just keep wanting to go back to the Mac, I guess, and computers in general and how those work, and the fact that you can just get any application that you want from any person's website. And I guess the big draw with the App Store was that you can have all of those applications in one spot, in one database. And we've seen, though, that kind of adds to the confusion more than it helps. Sure, you can search for an application, and when you search, you're only going to get applications that work on your iPhone, as opposed to going through Google and trying to find an iPhone application that way. But I still have a problem with it, and I guess I won't stop talking about it until I feel like it's been mitigated enough. And it looks like Apple is doing a good job with that by allowing, you know, developers to slip through and use those private APIs in case they do, and saying change it in the next version, which is good. So let's move on. AT&T has been getting a lot of grief lately. We haven't recorded in a week or two, so we haven't been able to cover this, but essentially Ralph De La Vega, is he the CEO at the, or is the president at the wireless division of AT&T?
I made the same mistake. He's like in charge.
He's CEO of AT&T. I don't remember ever seeing. I've seen him described as chief executive at AT&T Wireless or chief of AT&T Wireless. I don't know if that technically makes him CEO, but I mean he's basically the head of AT&T Wireless. He's not the head of AT&T.
Right.
That's Randall Stephenson is the head of AT&T.
Right.
But he's the head of AT&T Wireless.
Yes.
Yeah. So from I just did the quick Google from AT&T's website, president and CEO of AT&T Mobility and Consumer Markets.
Gotcha. So I believe he was talking with the Wall Street Journal 2 weeks ago about how poor the network quality is in networks like San Francisco and New York. So he essentially said, when I read through it, it didn't seem as menacing as everybody kind of made it out to be. But essentially he said that that they might look into offering incentives for the folks who take up 40% of the bandwidth. He was saying that, 3% of their subscribers are creating 40% of the data traffic. And to stop them from ruining it for everyone else, he says that they are planning to implement financial incentives in accordance to regulations and depending on the competition, they plan to start a pricing scheme that takes data usage into account.
Yeah, and so I think it's funny that you mentioned that, when you actually read it, it didn't seem that it was that
and then, of course, the internet blows
that ominous.
Yeah.
But I think for a lot of people, they hear that language and they think back to, many a mobster movie that says, we're going to provide you some incentives.
Sure, yeah.
There's kind of that undertone, we're going to do some things to push you in the direction that we would really like you to go.
Right. And since
we think
then,
it's for your best interest.
Never forget to serve man was a cookbook.
You're
young to know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea what you're talking about. But yeah, and since then, he talked to the Wall Street Journal about, he essentially said, we have not made any decision to implement tiered pricing. And that's kind of what I got from it. Although they said, so what would these incentives be, essentially? How are they going to mitigate this issue?
I think that's the problem. The problem is that they've sold us, or told us we have to buy. And we talked a little bit about this on my show, I think. But told us we have to buy an unlimited data package. And depending on which iPhone you have, that's $20 or $30, right? It's like you don't have a choice. You have to get this with your phone. We are the most expensive. I'm pretty sure iPhone owners pay about the highest rates, just even from a base rate. Compared to other phones on the network. Obviously you can tier up to, higher data plans, but or higher phone plans and pay more. But I mean it's definitely not cheap. And if I didn't want data, if I said I don't want an iPhone and I'm not going to use any data, I don't want any data, you don't get that choice. So it's sort of like, okay, you've already told me I have to buy unlimited. So where does the tier come in? Because I'm already at what would be the top tier. Well, that means then what they're going to do is take my $30 a month unlimited plan, right, and tier it down to something lower and then say, okay, well, if you really want unlimited, you have to pay $40 or $50, or if you want this level. See what I'm saying? So in order for them to implement it after the fact, I've been kind of thinking about this a little bit, they're going to have to crank down what I already pay for, which is unlimited, which basically means I won't have unlimited anymore, but I'm still paying the same price. And then if I want more, I'd have to go up. Now, I think about that and I go, well, that's just annoying to think about from that standpoint, just of them reducing what I already have. But the reality is I am not a heavy data user, so I don't even get anywhere close to probably where they would put the tier. You know what I mean? Like that 30 tier, if they put it at 5 gigabytes or whatever that level might be, I'm probably not going to fall in that range. So it's really not going to impact me, but it's sort of just the principle of the thing. It's sort of them telling us, hey, you have unlimited, and then not being happy that they gave me unlimited.
Right. And of course, the initial reaction I think everybody would have to this, the fact that the networks are doing poorly in San Francisco and New York City and Chicago and places like that. Of course, they changed to the 850 megahertz spectrum, which helps. And I think people, you know, have you been, you haven't had issues where you are, Adam, have you?
No, not here.
Okay. But yeah, in places like San Francisco. So it's good that they changed to that. But Gizmodo came out with a nice, really cute infographic, essentially showing that AT&T is making 80%, roughly more, 80% more revenue from wireless data than they did in the last quarter of 2007, back when the iPhone was initially launched. And skipping over all the stuff in it, essentially they're showing that AT&T is spending less on network improvements than they did back then. Have you seen this?
I haven't, Ken.
No, I haven't seen that. That's disappointing. I mean, it's not surprising, I guess, but it's disappointing.
Yeah. Despite these claims, a look at AT&T's financial and operations results, the report tells a different tale. AT&T has spent less on network construction each quarter than it did after the launch of the first iPhone, according to their financial reports, which is interesting.
Is that less in dollar amounts or is that less in percentage? Because the percentage that they would be spending, I would imagine, would be less because they're making significantly more now than they were. If you're talking hard dollars, though, then that would be very disappointing.
I'm not sure. Okay, yes. I'm looking through. During the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, AT&T has managed to keep profits steady, wavering just around $3 billion a quarter. In the first three quarters of 2009 alone, AT&T increased their cash and cash equivalents on hand by $4.375 billion. Blah, blah. So that isn't actually giving us a lot of information regarding wireless data revenues, and I'm not seeing whether these are actual percentages or hard money.
Yeah, that would be good to know.
It would be good to know. We'll revisit this.
Yeah, maybe. I got to go back really quickly to what Adam was saying as far as the $30, because I made a similar point on an episode of macOS Ken. I think it was the beginning of this week, or beginning of last week, rather. The problem that I'm having is while we've all been paying $30 a month for unlimited, AT&T has had plenty of time now to see how much people do normally use. So, I mean, they've got a good baseline. So, I mean, I think you're right, Adam. Hopefully what you're saying is true, that my $30, I will never approach what they will set as my limit. The thing is, I think most of us actually don't use nearly the amount that we think we do. I don't think we have any idea of how much data we're actually using. Like, I'm on my iPhone constantly, but most of it's not, I mean, except for checking Twitter. I mean, if I'm playing a game, I'm playing the game locally. I'm not playing on the network. Or, you know, if I'm watching a movie or listening to something on my iPhone, I mean, those are things that are both stored right here, right? So not every minute that I spend on my iPhone is spent doing anything that's data intensive at all or using the 3G network. And I would imagine I'm not alone in that. Now, certainly there are tons of people who are, you know, who have jailbroken their iPhones and they're streaming all kinds of things that they shouldn't be streaming, and they're running the, you know, 3G network through the roof for those particular people. It does worry me that they've had time to see, okay, $30 a month, people will swallow $30 a month. That's fine. And that they will set it even lower than, you know, like the level that you were talking about, so that just about everybody is going to want to add more, spend 40, just to make sure they don't go over. Because my fear is that they're going to make the average, what we all use on average, but they're not going to be generous with what they're offering for
right.
$30. which I guess it's horrible to assume the worst. I mean, just because
but it's 18, but it's a cell phone
like
company. Well, right. and let's be fair. Let's not even say it's AT&T. It's a cell phone company. We've learned since we were small children that the phone company is evil. Right.
And hopefully, maybe not. Maybe, I mean, I guess, I mean, the whole idea really kind of upset me. The things that upset me even more, though, or that bother me, when they stepped down off of their tiered pricing. We haven't decided we're going to go with tiered pricing. The piece that I read, and I can't remember where it was now, but it talked about the two things that they might do. First of all, widening free Wi-Fi that's available places, like the McDonald's Wi-Fi that they're going to start doing in January. And I'm assuming there's some money changing hands there. But, I mean, it's not really the same thing to say, oh, well, if you go to McDonald's and then turn on Wi-Fi at that place, then it'll be like having the unlimited 3G that you're used to having. The other thing that really bothered me was they're suggesting maybe we go with Bendicells so that you get this, you know, thing and it uses your existing internet connection in your house, and that will sort of increase the 3G network a little bit so that it's not going to bother you so much when you're in your house. It's going to ease some of the congestion, if I'm understanding it correctly, from the 3G network. But the problem is I'm already paying AT&T for the 3G, and then I'm going to pay them for this piece of equipment that's going to use my existing internet connection to boost it. So I'm paying for the internet connection. I'm paying AT&T for the 3G network. And then so AT&T doesn't screw me on my monthly charges for the 3G, I can rent this Femtocell thing from them as well. And then if that doesn't eliminate the congestion that they're talking about, we could still be talking about tiered pricing in 6 months to a year, right?
Yeah, that's, I think so.
Okay.
And I don't think yeah, those microcells will really do a whole lot to mitigate the issue anyway. I don't think the range of those will be that great, right? I think it will be...
But this is what what's his name? De La Vega was talking about in the piece where he... Or right. What somebody in the New York Times, I guess, was talking about in the piece where they said, look, nobody's saying we're going to do tiered pricing tomorrow. What about day after tomorrow? No comment about day after tomorrow. I'm sorry. Tomorrow, we're not doing tiered pricing.
Mm-hmm. So right now I'm having issues with GarageBand, and I'm not sure what to do.
Oh, God.
I know. Isn't this great? It's a podcast from hell. We may be recording right now, but I wouldn't know because it's just sitting there with a nice beach ball.
Awesome.
Okay, we're back. We're having some trouble with the Skype gods and the podcast gods. Someone's
the GarageBand gods.
GarageBand gods. They're just irritated with us. So we were talking about the AT&T tiered pricing, and we're finished with that discussion.
Yeah. So we're just gonna. Idea. Let's just say it's, you know.
No tiered pricing.
Like they should have done it from the beginning, or, you know, at the least I hope they grandfather those of us in who've been paying. But
hopefully they won't make any changes. But
yeah,
right now,
my
it's,
hope is that they're fair.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm sure knowing AT&T, they will be completely fair.
Nothing but fair, of yeah. course.
Yes. Okay, so let's move on to our iPhone picks. Actually, before we do that, we have to talk about our sponsor. And our sponsor this week is Mikus, the good folks at Mikus. They have two products that they want me to talk about. I have both of them. The first one is the BlueBridge AutoTalk, and it is a Bluetooth for your car. And the great thing about that is, obviously, you want to be able to keep your eyes on the road and not have to hold on to your phone, but you don't want to be one of those guys with the Bluetooth in your ear. And this is actually what I've been doing, to be honest. I've been using a different one, but I've actually used the Mikus as well. And it's just something you clip onto your visor. And actually with the Mikus, it has a suction cup mount that you put on your actual windshield. And that's because it's a solar powered Bluetooth speaker and microphone for your phone. Works with any phone, not just the iPhone, but it's really cool because you can hit the big, you know, call button and it'll bring up the voice control for your iPhone and you can say, you know, play Weezer and it'll start playing Weezer on your phone. And if you have it hooked up to your car like I do, then it'll start coming out of your speakers. So that's really cool. You can also obviously talk on the phone using the BlueBridge AutoTalk, and it's got 800 plus hours of standby time, up to 13 hours of talk time. Like I said before, it does the solar, but if you want to charge it using USB, like maybe you live in Alaska, sometimes you just you can't get to the sun, then you can use the USB charging. It has voice dialing, active in there. It'll actually read you the phone number that's calling you, which is pretty cool. And it's also got noise cancellation. And the other product they want us to talk about is the Charge Block. And the Charge Block is really cool because it's a teeny tiny little backup battery. It just pops on the bottom of your phone. It doesn't add too much to the bottom. It's just kind of something you'd want to bring in your bag. Maybe you're traveling, going to Macworld maybe, and in February, and you want to make sure you have something in case your phone is completely dead, and you want to make sure you can give it a little extra juice to get you to the point where you can go back to your hotel room or something like that. It adds, let me see how much it adds. It adds up to 11 hours of audio. It's kind of like a half of an iPhone battery. So it's enough to get you over the hump. It's good. And I've tried it and I like it. And that is the charge block for iPhone and iPod Touch. It's $40. The Micus Blue Bridge is $100 too. And so we thank Micus for sponsoring the show. And with that, we'll move on to our iPhone picks. And I'm going to go first because I don't want anybody to steal my pick.
That's very generous of you as the host.
I usually go first, but I'm going to, you know, I really like my pick this week. So my pick this week is PasteBot from the guys at TapBots. Did you guys have PasteBot as your picks? Either of you? Adam?
No.
Nope.
Okay, good. So my pick is PasteBot. It's $2 right now. It's on sale, and it's from the guys who've done WaitBot and ConvertBot. So it's always a robot-themed application. And this app, I feel like, well, let me say what it does first. It allows you to, it's a pasteboard application. So you can keep up to 99 different items on the clipboard. It's a special external clipboard outside of the iPhone clipboard. So as you know, on your iPhone, you can copy stuff out of one spot. You can copy text or images, and then you can paste it somewhere else. But what if you're dealing with a little more complicated situation and you want to maybe save something, go back to something else, copy that? This allows you to save up to 99 items in the clipboard, images and text. So you can keep those all there and paste it out later on to something else. You can delete it. You can manage it. You can actually set up folders so you can have permanent items that you have in your PasteBot. So stuff that you frequently paste out, maybe. You can actually apply filters to images. So you can, any image that you paste into PasteBot, you can do a lot of really cool stuff with it. Let me see here. You can change the brightness. You can convert to black and white. You can invert it. You can change the saturation. You can change you can add sepia to it. And with text, you can do a whole lot of cool stuff. You can do stuff like wrapping stuff in HTML tags. You can decode. There are just so many different things that you can do with this application. But the coolest part for me is that there's PasteBot Sync, which you can run on your Mac, which means you can essentially sync the PasteBot on your iPhone with the clipboard on your Mac. So let's say you have an image on your phone that you want to, you know, I'm chatting with Adam and I want to show him something that I just took a picture of. Well, instead of going to, you know, maybe Beehive on my iPhone, taking the picture and sending it that way, or doing it some other really inconvenient way, like using image capture and having to plug in my phone and having to drag stuff around, all you do is you open up PasteBot on your phone. You add the image from your image library on your phone, and then you say paste to Mac, and then it just pastes on your Mac. Adam, have I sent you anything from PasteBot yet?
I've used WaitBot.
It's magic. I feel like this application is just something that everybody should have on their phone. It should be something that comes with every iPhone, I feel like. Have you used it at all?
No, but I'm listening to your description and I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around it. So I might just have to buy it just to.
That's fine. Which part? Because I'm sure my description of it is just overzealous and not easy to follow.
It sounds like it has a lot of really cool features, and I'm just wondering how it integrates, you know, with everything. You know, knowing the restriction of I can't run stuff in the background. I'm sure it's very cool kind of text expander kind of way of managing things.
But. Well, no, it doesn't do anything weird in the background, obviously. It doesn't have an API like text expander does. It just simply relies on the fact that you can copy information, text or images on your iPhone from another application and then paste it in on PasteBot. So it saves whatever you paste into it.
Sure.
So then you have a clipboard of 99 items that you can save for
common
later.
Common items that I might send around, like signatures or
sure.
images or...
Just a temporary spot, you know,
yeah.
if you're working on multiple things. And then you can also have folders where you save stuff permanently or more permanently than you would otherwise. And then the sync feature is my favorite part, because maybe, you know, maybe you have something on your Mac, maybe a URL that you want to get on your phone somehow. You want to visit a URL. So you copy that URL on your Mac and you open up PasteBot and it'll send that over to your Mac, to your iPhone, and you get that text on your iPhone. Or you can do it the other way around. So you can copy paste between your Mac and your iPhone, essentially, is what I'm saying.
See, and it looks really pretty.
It is very pretty. It's the prettiest application I feel like TapBots has done.
Yeah, they do nice stuff. So I'd try it just because of how it looks.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just how I am.
And it's only $2.
To bring it back to what I was saying earlier, I am a sucker for a really beautifully designed app.
Oh yeah, me too. And honestly, if you get it just for the fact that it looks awesome, you will quickly realize that it's also very useful. So that's my pick. It's $1.99. It's called PasteBot, and it's by TapBots. And with that, I will let Ken go.
I would prefer it if Adam went.
Okay.
I have a feeling that I actually would steal Adam's if I went first.
No, probably not, because I'm going to have one that I think I just found out about actually from a listener, and it's because he actually had a friend of his write this app to deal with an issue that turns out that I was having, and I talked about, I think, I can't remember if it was on the show we just did, Ken, or not, but someplace I mentioned that I had the unfortunate incident of I took my car into the shop and somebody stole my iPod line-in cable, docking cable, that I used with my fifth-gen iPod. So I was looking to, I needed to have something I could plug in, and I was using my, I tried using my iPhone for a while, because I always said use my fifth-gen, and the problem with the fifth-gen is the battery is pretty much shot, so it won't hold a charge. So unless it's plugged in, the battery just dies in like 2 minutes. So I had to use some other iPod. So I was saying how awful the iPhone is for controls in the car, because it's just like the most dangerous thing. You cannot use it without looking at the screen. And So this listener emailed me and said, oh, I had a friend write this app called Touch and Play. And what it is it just basically turns the whole front of the iPhone into a controller with gestures. So it's just like one big surface. So for example, you tap once and that's play, pause. You just, anywhere on the screen, you just hit the screen, you know, just mash it with your hand or whatever. Two taps is brings up the music selection, so you can go through and you know, find another playlist or a track. If you tap four times, it will pop up a help menu, so you don't have to remember all these commands, but you know, they're pretty simple, so you can pick them up pretty quickly. One feature that I really like is when you swipe up, it does a skip back 30 seconds. A swipe down skips forward 30 seconds. So One of the things I have is, you know, podcasts, occasionally I'll want to go back and hear something that I might have missed. Maybe I wasn't paying attention right at that moment. So you can just quickly do that. And then swipe left and right is, you know, next and previous track. And then two-finger swipes up and down will do audio scrubbing, backwards or forwards, respectively. So, and then it has a three-finger tap to toggle your shuffle. So it solves that problem. You know, just have the iPhone there. You don't have to look at it, because you can just simply do these simple gestures anywhere on the surface, and it will control your music.
Cool.
So, very cool.
Yeah.
It's called Touch and Play.
99 cents.
And what's it called again?
Touch and Play.
Touch and Play.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, Ken, it's your turn now.
Okay, well, can I do two really quickly?
Yeah, absolutely.
One's kind of like honorable mention. I love the fact that you mentioned earlier that we were all three on the International Mac podcast earlier this week. They were talking the whole hour that I was on. It came up from time to time that they have an app for their podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And I downloaded it because I was going out to the store later and I wanted to see how, I think it was hour 11 of their 12-hour marathon was going. And so I was walking to the store and I was listening to their live stream and it was flawless, which is very cool. What most amazed me about it, though, was the fact that it was free. So, I mean, because I've got an app, and I'm not advertising my app, so I won't say what it's called, how much it is, but I charge for it, because what I was looking to do was maybe make a couple of extra bucks. What they were looking to do is grow their audience and sort of, you know, connect with the people that they have in a different way, so that even if you're not in the standard podcast arena, you know, then you can still do that. So that I was just impressed with. Plus, it's a pretty slick app. And for it to cost nothing, I mean, it seems to me that whoever wrote it, and I know it was one of the guys who's involved with the show who wrote it, he could go out to other podcasters, Adam, Michael, and maybe do something with you guys, because it's a slick podcast app dedicated to one show, which is not the one that I thought that Adam was going to take. I thought for sure Adam was going to say Dragon's Lair.
Oh, yeah. I thought about that.
When Space Ace came out, you were saying, in fact, I think the last thing in your Space Ace pick was, I just can't wait until Dragon's Lair comes out.
Yep.
So I'm very excited about having Dragon's Lair available. I have not gotten it yet. This week I start my Christmas holiday, and I will download it and probably just, you know, sit there and play the game until I get it. I'll be really excited because I've never seen how the game actually ends, because I was never that good at it when I was in the arcade.
Cool. It's $4.99, by the way.
Dragon's Lair is $4.99, right. And for people, it's probably for people our age, like me and Adam, and maybe a little bit older, because, I mean, that was like a turning point video game, just as far as how they could look. And then, of course, you play it, and it was just a bunch of A-B choices, and it's kind of like, oh, well, the gameplay is not so fun, but it looks really cool. And it used to cost, I think, somewhere between 50 cents and a dollar for every play. And so to be able to buy the whole thing for $5 and carry it in your pocket, it's half like, I remember how cool video games were when I was 13. And the other half is just sort of like, you know, vengeance. Like, I will kill the dragon for $5 no matter how long it takes me, because I spent $5 getting killed by the Lizard King I don't know how many times.
The Lizard King. Yeah, it's amazing Don Bluth animation thing, and it was all done on Laserdisc back in the day. And I only ever saw, the first time I ever saw the end thing was, we had somebody in our neighborhood whose dad serviced video games, and he had just the discs, the Laserdiscs, so you could put them in a standard Laserdisc player and just like play through all the chapters or scenarios.
So, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. So those are and forgive me for taking two, but those are my two.
That's fine. Did you said that the game actually ran on Laserdisc, or there was a separate version?
Yeah. So, you know, it's a lot like, you'll see it in a lot of DVD extras now that have little games, you know, where it's like you just have to hit, you know, left, right, up, or down at the precise right moment. And then what it does is it jumps to the next little segment or chapter of the Laserdisc, and then plays that, and then it's almost a little bit like a choose your own adventure. Like Ken was saying, that the game controls, like nowadays you look at it and it's like, oh, that's really stupid and simple. But back then, with how video game graphics were, these were fully animated, you know, it was Laserdisc video. So it just looked gorgeous. And really it was just a matter of memorizing the pattern and having enough timing to know, okay, right at this exact, you know, millisecond, I need to hit left or tap the action button or what have you. And, you know, one of the draws for me on the iPhone is it's just amazing to think that this has made its way to this little teeny tiny device that I can carry around in my pocket. And it there's a lot of nostalgia involved behind it for those of us who are children of the 80s.
Absolutely. I mean, for gameplay, the Dig Dug was much better as far as gameplay goes, but as far as like visuals, it was just stunning. I mean, it was a cartoon that you could, in theory, control.
Yeah, and Don Bluth animated things like The Secret of NIMH and All Dogs Go to Heaven and
I remember
all those great animated movies. I mean, he was up there back in, you know, when we were kids with, you know, some of the things that Disney and other people were doing. So,
right. Yeah. So, yeah, maybe just for nostalgia more than anything else for some of us, but $5 for a cartoon that you can sort of make happen.
Yeah, cool. Dragon's Lair is the name of the app. And with that, in our podcast marketplace this month, of course, is the Blue Bridge Auto Talk from Mikus. And you can find the iPhone picks, as well as the show notes at iPhoneLA.com/podcast. You can send us feedback to podcast@iPhoneLA.com, and you can find Ken Ray at the macOS Ken podcast at Twitter. No, that's Twitter. You have the twitter.com/macOS Ken, but the podcast is macOSKen.com, right?
That is it.
That is it. I highly recommend it. I listen to it every day to make sure I haven't missed anything. And I've actually sourced Ken a couple times on several articles on iPhone Alley. So it's very good, especially if you don't want to, you know, maybe our listeners are more used to listening to, you know, hours of us talking about nothing, you know, instead of 10 minutes of very concise, well thought out news from macOS Ken. But definitely check it out if you haven't already.
I think they should do both.
I think you guys should do both. I like that. That's a very good point.
Yeah, sure.
And if you're listening to two podcasts, then you might as well check out a third, the MacCast at MacCast.com. That's where you can find Adam Christensen. Of course, at twitter.com/MacCast as well.
Yep.
And thank you both for being here. And Ken mentioned his application in the App Store. That's the macOS Ken podcast app, right? Is that just called macOS Ken?
It's actually called macOS Ken podcast app. But if you search iTunes for macOS Ken, you know, as three words, Mac and then space OS space K-E-N, then you'll get both the podcast and the podcast app comes up, and you can choose your own adventure that way.
Yeah, you can support Ken that way too. And iPhone Alley's Twitter is twitter.com/iPhoneAlley. And with that, another iPhone Alley podcast is in the can.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No.